This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. March 20th is the 15th annual Great American Meat Out, an effort to help Americans kick the meat habit. One person who won't be celebrating is my guest Bruce Adels, an unapologetic meat connoisseur. He's the co-author of The Complete Meat Cookbook, which was just nominated for a James Beard Award. He also owns a gourmet sausage company and is a former restaurant chef. If the meat you remember from childhood is more tender than the meat you're buying today, it's probably not your imagination. Adele says there's an explanation for the difference.
The farmers and producers have responded for the public's desire to eat less fat, and so they sort of put their cattle and pigs on a diet, and they've been successful. It started about 20 years ago, and so the result is that pork is about 50% leaner than it used to be, and cattle, depending on the grade, is also much leaner. In fact, in 1986, they redid the whole grading system and created a new grade called USDA Select, which is a much leaner grade than what we were all used to buying, which was Choice, which is still available, but a lot of supermarkets now carry Select. It just has a lot less fat. And the good news is that, yes, it's healthier. The bad news is fat provides flavor. And it also juiciness and sort of texture tenderness. So the issue is how to make the meat that we have today taste almost as good as it used to taste.
We have a lot of suggestions for that in your new book. Why don't you give us a couple of how to put the juices back in?
Well, one of the things is you really do have to pay careful attention to how well the meat is cooked. And this is particularly true with pork, which tends to be the most well done of all meats. And the old recipes that tell you to cook it to 180 degrees, you need to throw those out. And you need to really cook pork. It's still going to be well done, but it's going to be in the range of 150 to 160 degrees, and that's the internal temperature. And it's the internal temperature of any piece of meat that determines, you know, how done it is or not. So that's really important. The other thing is to cook things gently. If there are things like stews and braises, instead of boiling them, you know, really vigorously, and to make sure that you select the right cut of meat for the right dish. And that's probably one of the most basic pieces of information. It's kind of obvious, but it isn't that obvious actually.
Let's get back to the pork for a second. You suggest cooking it at a slightly lower temperature than what the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, recommends. What about trichinosis? Are you risking trichinosis?
Well, no. I would never want to tell somebody that something that could cause a risk of some kind of foodborne disease. Trichinosis is killed at 137 degrees internal temperature. Which is actually sort of in the medium rare level. So I'm not saying to cook it down that low, but if you cook 10 or so degrees above that, or even 15 degrees above it, you're going to eliminate that risk. And the truth is that we don't have a whole lot of trichinosis in our meat supply, even though as a producer, I do own a sausage company, we have to treat every piece of pork as though it does have trichinosis. But the reality is that it's extremely rare.
How do you think buying meat has changed since you were a kid? What are the butchers getting different now that's different from what they used to get?
Well, it's amazing. First of all, butchers is a key operative there. Many supermarkets no longer have any butchers. They simply have clerks. So there's not that expert, that old-fashioned guy with a little bit of blood on his apron that you could go up to and say, you know, Mr. O'Malley, what do you recommend that I should buy for my meal tonight? Those guys are hard to find. Number two, this is the other massive change that's occurred. Meat no longer comes to the market on a carcass. It comes in boxes, and it comes already cut up into sort of large cuts, which are called primals. And what's even happening is that some meat companies are even selling things already completely packaged, ready to be served to the consumer in like little meat trays, and they even have their labels on it. So I would say that the future for butchery is not that great in this country. They're sort of getting phased out. So it's a problem. One of the things that boxed beef is produced, or boxed meat is produced, is some new cuts of meat that we didn't used to see a lot of. One of them is like pork tenderloin. Those never used to exist because they were always attached to the pork loin that had the bones on it. So you had to buy the whole pork loin and then, you know, get the butcher maybe to cut that out for you. So it has produced another wonderful cut that's been produced from the fact that meat is now sold in boxes is called Tri-Tip, which is a very nice little triangular-shaped beef roast that makes a perfect little roast beef for, you know, three or four people. So there are some benefits to this, but, gosh, the days of the butcher are just, they're numbered. And boy, if you have a butcher, if you know a butcher and you trust a butcher and you do business with him, keep him. He's like a car mechanic. Cherish him. Marry him. Do whatever you can. He's an important fellow.
Now, what about grading? Can you tell from the labels whether the meat you're buying is the top-graded meat?
Well, first of all, the top-graded meat, which I was mentioning earlier, is USDA Prime. It's in very short supply. Maybe 1-2% of our beef, again, I'm talking here about beef, comes out graded Prime. And of that, the first customer is the Japanese, who really like very heavily marbled meat. So what little is left then goes to the fine, high-end restaurants and specialty steakhouses around the country. And that leaves a tiny, tiny bit that goes into some specialty butcher shops and really high-end grocery stores. So let's say that for the average Joe, he's not going to be able to find Prime. But the next grade down is the Choice. And Choice is the one grade that shows the greatest amount of variation. It varies from sort of what they call the bottom end of Choice, which has the least amount of marbling, to the top end. Still has more marbling than Select. So that's what I would recommend most people looking for. And then a lot of stores will sell this USDA Select, and it's certainly fine for a lot of things like pot roast and some of the other cuts. And you just have to pay a little bit more careful attention. And if it isn't labeled on the package, if it doesn't tell you what grade, just ask the butcher, because he has to be able to tell you that. But sometimes it isn't on the package, so it is worth asking.
And if you're getting a lesser grade, does that mean it's less healthy or just less tasty?
No, it's probably the other way around. If you consider fat, a higher fat to be less healthy, then it's going to be more healthy for you in terms it'll have less fat. But it's just going to be a little more troublesome to cook and maybe not as delicious, especially, mm-hmm. you know, some of the steak cuts.
Now, how does the bacterial, you know, and E. coli scare affect your techniques of cooking?
Well, it's certainly, it means you got to think about how well you're going to cook meat. And the thing that's most important, where you have the highest risk, is ground meat. And ground meat, once you take a piece of meat that is basically sterile except for the outer surface and then expose it to the environment by chopping it up, and whatever it comes in contact with, it's going to pick up whatever possible bacteria are there. Now your risk is increased. So when it comes to ground meat, the safest thing to do is to cook that meat to an internal temperature of 160, which means well done. It still will be at 160, it still has a little bit of juice, especially if you buy like ground chuck, which has a little bit more fat in it. I think that it's not much of a risk for solid chunks of meat like steaks, because steaks are really seared on the outside, which is a high enough temperature to kill just about any kind of organism that might be living on the surface. And like I say, the interior of the meat is basically sterile.
You suggest that the indispensable tool for the chef who cooks meat is the digital thermometer. Tell us why this is so important.
Well, it's the whole name is digital instant read thermometer.
Oh, excuse me.
Because what most of us remember are these things called meat thermometers, and they were these big old clunky metal things. You stuck it into the meat, and you left it in there, and then you checked it, and it would tell you, you know, well, rare, medium. Unfortunately, number one, they were very inaccurate. And number two, they still have a lot of the old guidelines. Like, they still tell you to cook pork to 170 degrees. So forget about those. A digital thermometer is designed to take an instant reading. So you actually take the piece of meat out of the oven or whatever, open the oven door, stick that in, wait 10 seconds, and you get the reading of the interior of that piece of meat. And it's fairly accurate. It's very accurate. The reason I like digital as opposed to the dial type is because a digital actually only needs to have the tip inserted into the meat to give you a reading, while the dial type you need to actually insert a couple of inches. So they're very, very useful for steaks where you only have maybe a 1-inch thick steak, so you only have to push it in like to the middle, halfway in, half an inch, and you'll still get a nice reading so you can tell when steaks are done. So, I'll tell you the truth, yeah. Terry, though, none of us guys that actually cook a lot of meat ever use a thermometer. We use the old finger method.
And what is that method?
Well, you poke the meat, and you can tell by how firm it is, how done it is. It does kind of fall apart when you have a big old prime rib, though. And even the pros like myself do use a thermometer to tell a prime rib, because you can't tell at all by looking at it or pushing it, and because it's just too thick of a piece of meat.
But for the rest of us, you recommend that digital instant thermometer.
Yeah, it pays for itself the first time. You don't ruin the Christmas roast, right?
Exactly.
And your family is looking at you. What is this gray mass on my plate?
My guest is Bruce Adels, co-author of The Complete Meat Cookbook. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Bruce Adels, co-author of The Complete Meat Cookbook. Now, pork is really making a comeback, and it's being hyped as the other white meat. You call it in your book the most versatile meat. What's so versatile about it?
Because it has this wonderful propensity to go well with so many different flavorings. I'll give you an example. Pork tastes good with sweet things, with apples, with prunes. But it also tastes really good with pungent things, soy sauce, garlic, ginger. It's just very versatile. It also has a very, very nice texture in our mouth, a good flavor. Of course, you can roast it, you can stew it, you can pan fry it. The only thing about pork, because it's so much leaner, is you just have to be careful with the most popular cuts, which are actually the loin cuts, because, like I say, you don't want to overcook them. You don't want to cook those to 170 degrees, like the old recipes say.
What about those boutique meats like buffalo and ostrich? There's more restaurants serving buffalo burgers and ostrich burgers and ostrich dinners. And
okay, Terry, have you tried any of those?
No, I haven't.
Here's the deal. They have very, very little fat, which is good. But all these issues that I brought up earlier about really lean meats is very true. And the problem when you overcook things like ostrich, for instance, or venison, another wonderful meat, if you get it past basically really rare, it starts to get what I call a livery quality, where the meat gets very dry and pasty. And most people don't like that, including myself. So basically, you're limited to cooking these pieces of meat very, very rare. And if that bothers you, then I think that's pretty much going to eliminate trying those kinds of meats. Although, in the case of buffalo, buffalo stew is wonderful. And you can use some of those cuts from the shoulder and make some great buffalo stews. So that, but I don't know about stewing ostrich. I would think that would be a bad idea.
Did you grow up in the 1950s or 60s?
Yeah, 1950s. My mother was a 1950s onion soup cook. Everything had powdered onion soup in it.
What were the meats of choice that you were served by your mother?
Lamb chops cut very thin and crisp. Hamburgers made with onion soup cooked till all juices were removed. Chicken cooked to it was falling out, so you'd lift up the drumstick and the chicken would kind of fall onto your plate. let's see. She did have a bunch of casseroles, one which I really hated, called Shipwreck.
What was that?
Well, she said she learned it. During the war, I guess she worked in a shipyard, and one of her co-mates, workers, it was noodles, green bell pepper, which I hated as a kid, canned corn, hamburger, and spaghetti sauce. All mixed together and baked until the noodles got really soft and mushy.
Wow.
If my mother listens to this, she's going to kill me.
Or she'll make it for you.
No.
Well, you say in your book that her favorite spice, or in fact her only spice, was garlic salt.
Yes. Actually, the truth was it was Lowry's seasoned salt, which was a more glorified version of garlic salt. It was on everything. And her way of doing a piece of chicken was cover it very generously with Lowry's and then roast it or bake it in the oven. That was the fresh garlic was a rare event in my house. I think the clove that was there when I went to high school is probably still there.
Is there anything that you ate as a kid that you still like a lot now?
Oh, yeah, sure. My mother made a great brisket, pot roast out of brisket, delicious. Her short rib recipe was also very good. It's the old-fashioned one with, chili sauce, bottled chili sauce, but it's still good. And I got to admit, I did like the onion soup on the pot roast, where you basically throw in a package of onion soup and a pot roast and some stock or water. It's still pretty good. I did actually slip that recipe into my book.
Now you have doctoral degrees, I believe, in endocrinology and physiology.
Endocrinology is actually a branch of physiology. Yes, I do. It has nothing to do with anything I've said today. Don't hold it against me.
And you were? Am I right that you were studying to be a cancer researcher?
Yeah. No, I actually did it for 5 years. Worked down the road from Philadelphia in Bethesda, Maryland, for a year or two. I actually studied breast cancer. But the truth was, I found that I knew my career was not in science when I spent most of my afternoons planning the evening menu. And when I'd go to the library and fall asleep on the journal papers, I knew that I wasn't really motivated.
So what was the turning point where you said, I'm getting out of cancer research and into cooking?
Well, the government took care of that. The government in the late 60s and 70s really withdrew a lot of funding for basic research. And so this was in the end of the 70s, actually. The lab I was working in was basically closed down, so I kind of had to look for a job somewhere. And the economic reality was that I was a better cook, and somebody offered me a job.
Well, since you know a lot, obviously, about medical research, I'm wondering if you have any concerns about eating a lot of meat leading to either cancer or heart problems.
Right.
How's your cholesterol?
Moderately high, not too high. It's sort of, you know, right there. Well, first of all, I'm not telling anybody they should eat a lot of meat. I just think that they shouldn't eliminate meat from their diet if they enjoy it. But, you know, I'm not also saying to anyone that thinks that they shouldn't eat meat to go ahead and eat it. I mean, or am I trying to ever talk a vegetarian into, you know, going back and eating a rare steak? But I think that if you're going to have meat, you shouldn't enjoy it. And that's basically my message. Just get the most enjoyment you can out of whatever you're gonna cook.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Bruce A. Dells, co-author of The Complete Meat Cookbook. Now, you run a sausage business. What makes a sausage a sausage?
Basically, not much. It's basically a mixture of ground meat and spices, or ground protein. So poultry would classify as a sausage. Seafood, I do draw the limit at vegetable sausages, which I kind of think is an oxymoron.
And
I don't get it.
Are they stuffed in intestine?
Yeah, that's why it's kind of weird. Someone who was a vegetarian would even want to think about a sausage. They're stuffed into, there are synthetic casings, but the natural casing is some part of the digestive tract of either a pig or a sheep or a cow. All the tissue's been stripped away, just leaving a kind of a fairly strong membrane, and that's the casing that you put the meat into.
So how do you get the intestine casings? Do you just, like, buy lots of, I mean, how does it get sent? What shape is it in when you get it?
It's a whole industry. They tend to come from countries like China, Spain, and Denmark, which are all big pork producers. All the tissue part is removed, and you just have this tough membrane. They're salted, and then they're dried, and then they're preserved forever. And we get them rehydrated in water, which re-softens them, and then we can put the sausages in. I'll have to bring it to my plant someday. Watch it being made.
Are they fragile?
Depending the size of the animal, determines the fragility. The sheep casings are the most fragile, and those are the kind that are used to make, like, little breakfast sausages or the old-fashioned hot dogs. Pork are sort of in the middle, and the beef ones are pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you want to peel a beef casing off. You don't usually want to eat that because it's so tough.
Are you familiar with the mail-order meat that's available now, where you can send away for?
Absolutely. There's a number of companies. Well, let's go back to that issue of prime meat. It's so hard to find in most parts of the country. There's a couple of companies that you can actually purchase prime meat. We didn't talk about another wonderful thing that really helps beef, which is aging, dry aging. Also very, very hard to find. And some of these companies, they're actually in Chicago, sell prime dry aged steaks for a big chunk of money, but they're also very, very good.
Well, doesn't the meat spoil as it's going through the mail system?
It's all done frozen.
Oh.
And it's not, of course, it doesn't go through the mail. It goes through FedEx.
I'm taking this a little too literally.
That's why, I mean, one of the reasons.
The stamps on the carcass.
Yeah, FedEx. I mean, I ship my sausages all over the country. And it's all done FedEx, and we ship them in a styrofoam box with gel ice, and they start off frozen. They may not arrive frozen, but they're still, you know, completely cold and fine to either refreeze or eat as is.
Bruce Adels, he's the co-author of The Complete Meat Cookbook. Yesterday it was nominated for a James Beard Award. This is Fresh Air.